The Auckland Art Deco Society welcomes you to our Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future Deco Society and other related events, also book reviews, handy household hints, and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era. Deco Retro. Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Nancy. The joys of collecting antique linens are many. Collecting exceptional linens, using them in our home, connect us with the woman in the past, those that develop such artistry and skill with a needle and thread. Artfully embroidered linens wrap your home in refinement. Used daily or for special occasions and holidays, antique linens well cared for appreciate in value. They are a beautiful, cherished heirloom for future generations in your family. An heirloom antique embroidered handkerchief is a bride's something old or something borrowed. Antique pillowcases make your bed a dream. Antique monogrammed napkins are a perfect way to make your table look elegant and chic for a dinner party. Today we have in the studio Vicky Mossong, who has a great passion for collecting beautiful old linen. She has a little business called STARCH, which I think spells starch, selling the most beautiful linen I have ever seen, which is sourced from all over the world. Vicky and her husband Brian run several vintage and antique fairs. She is president of the Costume and Textile Association of New Zealand and a long-term member of the Auckland Embroiderers Guild. Vicky, welcome. Lovely to have you with us today on Planet FM.
Thank you, Nancy.
Vicky, is collecting these beautiful linens something new, or have you always been involved in this type of thing? I believe you studied graphic design in your early days. Did this sort of lead you into this type of thing?
Not really. It's almost out of left field dealing with the textile. My early career was nothing to do with the graphics, but the art history taught to me was very, very relevant to virtually everything I have done since, from drafting conservatories to designing jewellery in the jewellery trade to... Even helping with strange things like layout for bathrooms when I was selling plumbing equipment.
Oh, okay.
But that all tied in with metals, expansion and contraction of metals and that sort of thing. But the graphics, particularly with linen, has stood me in very good stead from the art history, because nothing comes very often with a name and a date on it, unfortunately.
Oh,
so you have to guess the period for your 1920s Art Deco things. A lot of the designs will tie in with Clarice Clough. So you can have your linens match your tea set. That sort of thing. And the colours that were used, they do tend to tie in.
Yes.
And so Art Nouveau, same sort of thing earlier.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting. Now, you have some beautiful linen. I've been to some of your fairs and it's absolutely gorgeous. Is there any particular linen in, you know, that you would like to talk to us about today? You know, really special linens that you really enjoy having and buying and...
There are special linens. The monogramming is interesting. It has a history. Mm-hmm. And I like the things personally that have the history. Okay. The monogramming, sometimes you'll have a laundry mark on there and it will have a name.
Oh, okay.
And so you get a little glimpse into who might have owned them.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know...
That'd be interesting.
It is. It is.
Yes.
I have had very large dining cloths which have the laundry marks on for well-known Auckland families.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I like basically to place those. I like to know where they've gone.
So what is the laundry mark sort of like? It's a little...
In the Edwardian era, Victorian era, you sent your laundry out. You didn't actually necessarily do it all yourself and boil it and beat it with a stick in a copper.
Not if you're a lady.
You had help. Everybody had help.
Yes.
And they would send the laundry out and it would be marked with Indian ink. With the name and number of some sort or whatever for the account numbers. And they come back and, you know, one tablecloth, for instance, I had was from the Entrecan family.
Okay.
And the Entrecan Sims were a well-known Auckland company, I think electrical from memory. So that was nice to know where that came from. And there is a local Mount Albert homestead.
Yes,
for them as well. So I presume it's been in that house.
Yes.
It's nice to know those things.
Mm. Well, that's interesting. Mm. What about the, is it the French porthole or porthole?
Yes, that's the sort of thing that's like the unicorns. They're the ones you're always hunting out and they're not necessarily there. Porthole Linen is a French company. There are two companies that are basically the top end.
Mm-hmm.
Top end linen, top end embroidery on the linen. The Portholt company did the trousseau for Wallis Simpson when she married Edward VIII.
Oh, yes, and I believe a lot of other famous people too.
The Portholt company did the linen for the yacht Christina. There's a very good book called The Book of Fine Linens, written by one of the Portholt family that has a lot of illustration and photographic illustration of it. The needlework is very, very fine. The linen is exceptional and that's what you're paying for. It's them and one other company, an Italian company called Frette. You can get that here, but pretty much their cottons, not their linens.
Oh, okay.
Linens are very expensive.
Okay.
Very, very, even the modern ones.
Oh, so cotton is used as well as a good linen and this type of thing.
Yes. And in New Zealand, we tend to have a history of cotton, not linen.
Oh, well, okay.
So our sheeting in the main, the older antique sheeting, is more likely to be cotton rather than linen.
Why is that? Cooler?
I don't know. I think so. And I think it's to do with the tropics and everything else like that too. The linen also would have taken a lot more management than the cotton.
To actually
keep it and launder it.
Oh, yes,
and
of course.
Press it and everything else that was involved with it. I think the cotton was perhaps a bit more practical. I don't know.
Sort of heavier, isn't it? Is linen sort of heavier than cotton?
Well, that's the other thing too, shipping.
Mm.
Linen is exceptionally heavy.
Yes.
It has a real weight to it, real heft.
Yes. So how do you acquire these gorgeous old pieces, or is that a secret?
No, it's not a secret. 95% of what I get in this country.
Oh, really? So there's a lot out here.
There is a lot out here. Having said that, we had restricted imports, so we have a lot the same out here.
Oh, okay, yes.
The balance of it I buy offshore, but having said that, the stuff that I buy here, Auntie Mildred's going into the home. Can you please come and have a look at it?
Oh, really?
And at least if it comes to someone like me, it goes on to somebody that will appreciate it.
Oh, thank goodness.
Rather than landfill.
Yeah, well, some of the families just don't appreciate that type of thing, do they?
No, and it is better
so
that,
sad.
It is better that it does come to someone like me. Having said that, there's just me. I can only do what I can only do. But
yes.
We do a lot of laundry, a lot of mending.
Yes, I'm sure. So how old would some of these pieces be? Were they sort of old when they came to New Zealand?
Yes, some of them. Some of them were new. I have a 1909 catalogue that has the sizes of the cloths you could order.
Mm-hmm.
It was sent to an address which is now under the Auckland Motorway. The catalogue.
Okay.
It has little samples of the different weights of linen that you could buy.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you the patterns and the damask for your tablecloths and the napkins you could order.
Yes.
You can order your handkerchiefs hand embroidered by the dozens or gross.
Oh, really? Gosh.
And it also said it was embroidered by Irish peasant girls as well, which is not very PC, but that's what it states in the catalogue.
Well, that's quite fantastic, really, isn't it?
Yes.
It comes out
so
a bit of
that's as
history.
New. Having said that, I have coming into my stock two exceptionally large tablecloths, roughly 5 metres each, dated 1853.
Really?
To 1873, but...
Gosh.
Yes. That age, and I would figure there's still a considerable number of years wear still in them. They are, it's very, very strong fabric. Good linen, you get what you pay for.
Yes, and how do you actually sort of preserve, you know, keep it sort of, well, you know, from the moss and all this sort of thing? Is there any special... things you do?
The two enemies of fabric or textile are light and insects.
Yes, yes.
That's what you always got to go. They tell you not to hang things in the light. It works the same for watercolour paintings.
Yeah, especially light. Our sunlight. It's dreadful.
And
yes.
Older paintings like that are on rag paper. So it's textile and it's light and insects again every time. So you preserve in things like camphor wood chests, cedar wardrobes. You see the wood shavings in with them.
Yep.
And just basically keep an eye on them, turn them over from time to time.
Now, you and your husband, Brian, run the Auckland Vintage Textile Fair.
Yes.
Can you tell us what sort of people have stalls there and who actually buys from there? And how did you actually start to, how did you get this Auckland Vintage Textile Fair together, you know, what?
The Auckland Vintage Textile Fair, I worked the last two fairs at Alexandra Park Market, so that's a long time ago, and there are several of us that have worked through those, and one of the ladies, I think people will remember, Kay Wolf, who owned Salvage, the shop in Mount Eden Road, and I were just chatting, and she'd been to a vintage textile fair in Sydney and said we should think about starting one. So she and I went and found a venue. We sorted out a whole heap of people. The first one was done at St Mary's School, and I think we terrified them. We had a queue of 600.
Gosh.
It was an extraordinary number.
So there's obviously
the need
a lot of people.
Was and the want was there. So
did you do a lot of advertising, or do these people?
No, as much
word
as we could,
and
you know, cut our cloth. And, you know, with not an awful lot of TV advertising and things like that. You just can't afford to.
No,
and
it's too expensive.
With a one-off new venture, you've got to really go fairly carefully before you do it. But we had a feeling that it was going to go very well. My husband didn't seem to think it was. We proved him wrong.
Yes, got to be positive.
Exactly. And it's been wonderful since then too. And the appeal is broad. It's not a lifestyle fair. It is a textile fair.
Okay.
The product is, the rules are 1970s and older, genuine. Not things made out of things, no recycled or upcycled or reproduction. We are a source for that.
Right.
So for people that want to make things, we get the fashion workrooms through, looking for a different button or the way a shoulder is set, that sort of thing. We get the TV people looking for stuff for period programs, theatre companies for the same sort of thing, collectors, practitioners, makers, people that quilt. All sorts of people
come.
And then it's a bit of spectacle too, because we get, although it's not a lifestyle fair, we'll have the steampunk people come dress stuff. And the people.
I think the last time I was there, they were there. Which is great.
And the Lolitas, like Alice in Wonderland, they're fabulous. And the 50s dresses, and the people looking for things for Art Deco Week. And
rock and rollers, do they come along?
Yes. And your rockabillies and all that sort of thing, and it's marvellous. They're real spectacle. It's lovely.
So how many store holders do you actually have?
I would say we have between 35 and 40 to fill that big room with the biggest undercover room we can get.
And it's pretty well, you know, like it's full of stalls, isn't it? It always seems to me.
When you say 35 to 40, each is a very big space. There are six trestle space, so that and they're not trestles. They have garment racks and they have things like that. They've got to really be able to cater for an event that sort of size. It can't really do one trestles at a time. The space is not.
Are you fairly sort of selected selective with your, you know, people that want stalls, or, I mean, you'd have to be, wouldn't you?
We've got to the point now where I personally like the fair balanced, so that we're not top-heavy with costume jewellery, we're not top-heavy with clothing, that there is a very good mix. And also, I like the specialists. We have a lady that specialises in blankets. We had this last time, a woman who deals in antique and vintage African fabrics and beading.
Oh, really? How interesting.
Yeah.
Gosh.
That was fascinating. Just stuff that's people that have a point of difference are helpful for what we do. Mm. But we have... one of our dealers is Cynthia Reed, who's the lady that knitted the shawl for baby George that we gave from New Zealand.
Okay. What sort of stall does she have?
She has a good general one, a very good vintage thing. She's a very good needlewoman, so we get things like English strippy quilts and all sorts of very interesting different types of older needlework and you know, your doilies and your tablecloths and that sort of thing, but also clothing and knitted garments and quite an eclectic mix and a good mix. And she knows her stuff. It's great. We get people like Rosemary McLeod, who wrote the books about New Zealand, particularly women's work in the 1920s to 1940s, 50s, about the different types of needlework, the types of aprons, the sack aprons, the doilies.
Yes, of course.
And
I sort of remember those, you know, it brings it all back. I remember my mother having a sack apron.
Yes, they had to. They were practical.
Yes.
And they stitched things on them to make them pleasant. They weren't just work wear.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. You used to be able to do an awful lot before they invented television.
Now, what else was I going to ask you? Oh, you're a member of the Costume and Textile Association of New Zealand. Now, that's quite an interesting association. I believe you're the president, is that right?
I am. I'm the president at the moment. The Costume and Textile Association was established in 2002. We come under the umbrella of the Museum Institute, so it's quite a... formal, I suppose, sort of an organisation, but it isn't. It's quite informal as well. But it's a forum for the study, research and conservation of dress and textile is basically the description on the letterhead. And we produce two magazines a year and also a symposium, a two-day symposium every year about textile. Our next one is the 21st to the 23rd of September 2018, and it is at Otago Polytechnic this year in Dunedin.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And the theme of it is Unbound, Liberating Women, and it is to it's as near as we can get to the anniversary, 125th anniversary of women's suffrage in New Zealand.
Oh, good one.
So that is the theme, and they are actually calling for papers at the moment until June. You can find all that out online. If anybody
wants
to.
That sounds actually interesting. So it's held at a different venue, like
yes, we try and spread the
city,
love.
Yes, that's good.
This year's one in May was in Hamilton. The year before that was Wellington. We shift it round.
That's good. Yes.
Yeah, there's input from all over the place, including people come from overseas.
So how many people would you have sort of coming along to one of those symposiums?
Oh, since it's 3 days and people have to stay, usually between 60 and 100.
Right.
And it's full on talk fest, and it's fabulous. It really is interesting. Come away from it very fired up about so many things. And it's not just the historical aspect of it. We have people who come and talk about cutting edge three-dimensional printing techniques for fashion, come and talk about new fabrics and what they're doing, talk about
very interesting
modern ideas of recycling fabric and reusing and upcycling what they call cabbage, which is the offcuts from commercial production. All sorts of different things.
I think we'll have to join that. It sounds really interesting.
Anybody's welcome to join. It's reasonable. It's $50 a year for your two magazines.
Gosh, so it's very reasonable.
And
isn't
$35 for the unwaged. So
that's pretty good.
We try and keep it reasonable.
Yeah. Now, you also have a great interest in jewellery, and you've got some very nice jewellery on today. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that? That's more sort of in your early days in London,
I think. Yes, it was, certainly here in New Zealand and in England. I lived in London twice. I am patrial. I have a UK grandparent entry certificate, so I can live and work there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes up to 4 years, and then I can have the right to apply for residency. And from the training I received here in this country, I have the ability to work in some very, very top-end jewellers.
Because of your graphic design?
That is partly it. I don't have a jewellery qualification. My mathematics is not strong enough, and I will put my hand up to that. You have to have quite a bit of...
Well, not all people with great qualifications are always,
it's...
The best, are they?
No,
sometimes it's my practical experience. Yes.
It is, and it's also... my forte is selling. I sell things.
Yes.
I sell jewellery. I sell linen. I sell conservatories. I sell taps and fittings.
You name it, you do it.
It's interesting.
Yes.
But the jewellery was certainly interesting. The first time I worked in London, I worked in Bond Street.
Yes.
For an older company. They established in 1917. I looked that up last night to find out, but certainly it was older. And it was in the old Bond Street, the Piccadilly end.
Oh, my gosh.
And
interesting. Yes.
That particular company was 80% imitation.
Oh, okay.
And 20% probably the best cultured pearls in the world. And
lovely. What was the name of
that company? The name of that company is Ciro. Ciro Pearls Limited at that time, it was called. And I worked there at the time Diana was buying and wearing pearl chokers. And that sort of thing. So we were supplying...
She had some gorgeous pearls, didn't she?
Yes.
Absolutely lovely.
Yeah, not all that they were seamed, as was the official version from the palace. But we were supplying a lot to the debutantes and things that she associated with a lot to those...
fantastic.
Yes, very, very interesting. Very interesting clientele as well, which was fun.
Yes, I bet. Who were the main sort of clientele, like... Anybody famous?
There were famous ones. Barbara Cartland.
Oh, yes. I can see her and
if we had our heads down working and looking and stringing, and when Miss Cartland came in, the room glowed pink because it was a long salon with mirrors right down that room, and she reflected all the way down. It was lovely.
Yes,
it all
yes.
had basked in the warm glow. And she's a very, very energetic woman. She wanted to see. She kept two of us busy when she came in full time.
Yes.
You know, you were collecting things for Miss Cartland to look at and
she was.
That sort of thing. And the... restringing her particular pearls was a very specialist job, and the manager there, she was the person that was capable of doing it. It wasn't, stick them on there and stuff some knots in it. They had to be balanced because they were in big spaces, and she's very
petite.
Tall woman. She's a very big woman.
Goodness, I always thought she was a sort of rather...
I tried on one of her collars as just to see, for a fitting thing, and I wasn't suitable because I'm certainly not that sort of size.
Yes.
And the spaces on that collar sat out past my shoulders. So it's beautiful, big necklaces that she wore.
Oh, my gosh.
Lovely.
I didn't think of her as being a sort of tall...
No, she's quite a tall, statuesque lady. And when she was coming in, she was in her 80s, so she's probably not as tall as she was.
No. Now, we're running out a little bit of time, Vicky, but I thought you might like to mention some of the future fairs that you and Brian are sort of organising, possibly the end of this year and also the beginning of next year.
We do. We run several events during the year. The Auckland Textile Vintage Textile Fair has just been. That's usually the end of August.
Yes.
And we tie that in with Fashion Week because then people can come for two or three different reasons. The next fair we're doing is actually a new one, and that's the Saturday, and that's the Collectible Doll and Toy Fair. The Auckland Doll Club asked us if we would like to run it for them.
That's an interesting one, yes.
They would like to just do it, not run them, and that makes perfect sense to us.
Yep.
And it will be interesting, and by dint of the fact that we do the Vintage Textile Fair and others, there will be textile there. There will also be fashion dolls, but we've made it bigger and incorporated things like your Star Wars toys and your your trains and aeroplanes and
makes
things. So there's
more interesting. Yes,
yeah, there's a balance there of male and female. So we can try and do that. And then the following month is the Auckland Retro Fair, which is all your mid-century modern. It's your 1950s to 70s furniture and Tupperware and Murano glass and lighting and anything from that time.
Right.
And new furnishings and things.
Yes.
Both of those, all of our events of that size are held at Alexandra Park, as I said. Biggest undercover room we can get.
Yes.
It's one day. There's plenty of free parking and we try and be reasonable with the excess price too. So we do that. And the other things that we do the Three Little Mount Eden Antique Fairs.
War Memorial Hall. I've been to some of those. Yes.
And they're just a little bit different but more relaxed and not the same sort of size, but they're interesting and same type of people really probably.
Well, look, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you, Vicky. We do have some future events that Philippa's going to read, and we'd like her to do that now, and then we'll, I think you have a piece of music that you might like to play at the end, so we can sort of bring you back and you can tell us why that's a special piece of music. But at the moment, we'll get Philippa to read future events.
Deco Retro Future Events.
Don your finest Auckland Heritage Festival glamour and join the Art Deco Society as we relive the glory of the radio show. Napier's iconic Bertie and Penelope will entice you with adventure, mystery and mirth. Watch a radio show being born. Cheer the hero, boo the villain, and get ready as you may be the next star of radio. This takes place on Saturday the 14th of October at 7 p.m. at the Dolphin Theatre, 12 Spring Street, Onehunga. Price is $30 and this includes a glass of wine on arrival. For tickets, contact Nancy Smith 09 846 9909 or 021 481 367. I'll just repeat that. Nancy Smith, 09 846 9909 or 021 481 367. You could email Nancy at nancy.smith@vodafone.co.nz. Tickets for this event are prepaid only. No door sales, so get in quick for your chance of instant stardom on the airwaves. Now, well-known New Zealand actor and director David Charteris performs One of Those, an historic blackmail drama at the Garnet Station Tiny Theatre, 85 Garnet Road, Westmere, Auckland. Written by David Charteris, this play is based on the trial of Charles Mackay, the mayor of Whanganui, who in 1920 shot but did not kill the soldier and poet Darcy Cresswell, who was blackmailing him to resign the mayoralty or he would expose him as a homosexual. The trial was a sensation at the time, and Mackay, who was married, received 15 years hard labour. Served 7, but was later shot by mistake by a policeman in Berlin in 1929. In this hour-long play, Charteris gives both sides of the encounter that resurrects the colourful character of Cresswell, the self-opinionated blackmailer. Here are the dates. Thursday the 12th and Saturday the 14th of October at 8 p.m. and Friday, the 13th of October, at 7 p.m. I'll just repeat that. Thursday the 12th and Saturday the 14th of October at 8 p.m. and Friday the 13th of October at 7 p.m. To book online, go to garnetstation.com. For inquiries, phone 360-3397. 360-3397. And that's all for now.
Unfortunately, listeners, we haven't any more time left. We were going to play Vicky's music, but we can't. So we will just say goodbye for now, and thank you for listening.